wasn't on the table. It wasn't a military town like Halifax is a Navy town. We had no military presence in our community, but it was just a bit of a way out of poverty. And we had another layer of trauma in my family, in that when I was 12, my mother was in a car accident and had a traumatic brain injury and lived the rest of her life and is still living today in a nursing home, and was never able to parent. So I've been looking after myself since I was 12. There's five of us siblings, 1 year apart. We all say we're the same age. So I joined the military and absolutely loved it and would have stayed forever. And in the mechanic field, my boss noticed that I had a little bit of leadership capacity, and he thought that maybe I should change trades, go off to National Defense Headquarters in Ottawa, and become an officer. That was my trajectory. And this was in 1991. And in 1990, and while I was there, it was around the time of the first Persian Gulf War, of course, and we were going to be going into Turkey to hand out food supplies, and my boss in Ottawa now says, you should go. I love bossing people around. This was my strength. And in that process, I had to have a medical done. And it was during the eye exam that they tell me that I have a disease called retinitis pigmentosa. And on that day, when I drove to the eye doctor in my brand new car, they told me that I was legally blind and I lost my driver's license.
Oh my goodness.
And that was the end of my military career. It was prior to the day of wonderful transition. So I left the military in poverty, making $551 a month without a lot of skill. You know, I had not built a network. While my friends in their 20s were having babies and building networks in the civilian world, I was not. So that transition was a terrible transition. And I always like fast, go fast through that piece, because I said I wasn't going to cry today. It was an absolute nightmare. And it took me almost 10 years to land on my feet. And by this time, I'm getting close to 40. And I was divorced, disabled, at risk of becoming homeless, all of the stuff. And I went in, the only real skill I had besides soldiering was being a mechanic. And there was no job for me, you know, in that industry. You know, I struggle with tunnel vision, and now I have other complications, but I can't move quickly. I can talk quickly, but I can't move quickly. And so I was having a terrible time finding a job. I had moved here to Nova Scotia, and in Nova Scotia, you need to know people. And I didn't know people here. And it's a, you know, it can be a bit of a challenging place to find work. And so I went to this organization in Sackville, community about half an hour from here, where they did resumes for underemployed people. And it was a very humbling day. And we did a bunch of aptitude tests. And she said, have you ever thought about university? Now, I will tell you, at 40 years old, I did not know anyone who had been to university. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, can you go to university at 40? And she said, you can go to university anytime. And I said, how do we do it? And that was it. Therein started my learning journey. And this was 20 years ago. And it has been amazing, just an amazing, not without its pitfalls, but it's been quite remarkable. But I am most proud of the fact that I was the first journeywoman mechanic, and I still, you know, I still there are certain doors when I walk in, especially in the blue collar world, that I don't lead with my university degree because of the resentment between the classes, you know. But I am most proud of my military work. I trained as a steel worker. I didn't become a journeyman. I'm an apprentice steel worker, and I did teach steel work to some people, but it was for the oil and gas industry. And next slide. And it isn't going to be just me talking, because we're taking a break so I can leave. I went to university and got a degree in political science. Once I got at university, they wanted me to declare a major, and all of this was new to me. I had very basic language skills. You know, my parents are functionally literate, and My family, you know, same way. They haven't been around, they haven't had a lot of exposure to the world. And in university, they were using a lot of big words. And that first year, it was like burning through a dictionary every day. And they, and I do have a little bit of salty language on occasion, although I promise I won't wear it here today. But I do remember saying every now and then, is there any need to use that? You extrapolate this, you son of a, you know. But I did graduate with a degree 4 years later and got the book prize for the top marks in the class. That was commuting 3 hours a day, and I had an 8-year-old child when I started, single mother, you know, visually impaired and poor. And I thought, as a blue-collared person, that that degree would open all kinds of doors. Remember, I had never met anybody who'd been to university, but it seemed that everybody I knew or had heard of that went to university had a good job. But you know, time has changed. University is a bit of a commodity now, and I didn't get a job, but they wanted their money. You know, it was student loan, and they wanted it paid back. So in 2008, I graduated. In 2009, I have to put my house on the market because I couldn't keep it. No longer pay the bills. I'm heading into bankruptcy, which I finally did do. But the student loan is never covered in bankruptcy. Right. But anyway, that happened. In 2010, I've applied for 3,000 jobs in Nova Scotia. So that big dream about get your university degree, you'll get ahead. I'm still, by this time, I'm making $16,000 a year on a disability pension. And I was very, very discouraged. I packed everything up. My daughter went off to school and I went to Ontario to try and find work. And while I was there, I met a man who was helping disabled people start businesses. And he said, "Have you ever thought about starting a business?" And I said, "What the F would I sell?" And he said, "Debbie, you've learned a lot of stuff. And if I knew what you knew, I'd be a millionaire. But you're going to bankrupt. You're going bankrupt." And I would have normally walked away because the other thing that I noticed about first generation people is they're not very good at letting you know they're vulnerable. So, you know, if I hadn't been pushed to the wall, I would have told him where to go and left. But I walked back and asked them, like, what did he see that I could sell? Really, all I could think about was the only thing I worked at, soldiering and mechanics. And he started to tell me how good I was at figuring stuff out, and you know, I could sell my knowledge. So it started out with selling everything I knew how to do, literally. I could teach you how to change your wiper blades and but while I was at university, somebody was interested. I got a scholarship because of my first generation, you know, being at university. And they invited me to the Women's World Conference in Ottawa. And while I was there, after I left there, I gave a talk to a room full of people about the education of at-risk adults and the people that had come alongside in university to help me get through, you know, because it was terribly overwhelming every single day. Not so much now. I'm not in poverty now. I live a good life now. I'm never overwhelmed. But back then, everything was overwhelming. And anyway, they invited me to the Women's World's Not On. I went there and I spoke to this room full of about 80 people. And after I got back from there, they paid for me to go. When I got home, somebody called me from another part of Canada and they were involved in housing Indigenous people. And they said, "We want to write a grant application for $1 million for a housing project for incarcerated Indigenous women." Now, the little voice inside of me was saying, "Did I tell them I knew how to do that?" So I said to her, "Did somebody tell you that I could do this?" And she said, "No, but if you can talk like that, you could write down what we're trying to say." And that was my first foray into business, my first contract, $18,000. I thought I'd won a million. I didn't make another cent for a full year. That was it. I made that in 6 weeks. That was the start. And then I learned how to do income tax, and I did some income tax. And we can advance this slide now. And I want to talk about this for a second. So I was at home, a home-based business, out telling the community of blue-collar people, you know, I'll help you with stuff. You would not believe the kinds of stuff. It was all legal. Very much legal. They paid me to do all kinds of stuff. I needed the money, and if I could figure out how to do it, I would do it. One day, an organization called me and said, in order to get the funding we're trying to get, we need to learn the logic model of change management. And I said, I know how to do that. And that was a bold-faced lie. I'd never heard tell it. And I went to the library and I got a book and I taught them how to do it. And they were able to get their funding. I said yes to everything. But I started to develop a little bit of a love for taxes, not so much for the taxes. I'm not much on data entry. But I liked working with people. If you've ever been in trouble with the revenue people, it's not a nice place to be. You know, if they're going to take your house and force you out of your home. And I started to get really good at advocating. Communication is my strong. And I was advocating with our Canada Revenue Agency, like your IRS, to get payment plans for these people. And they were mostly blue collar plumbers, carpenters, that kind of thing, with little businesses. Hardly making enough to get by, couldn't afford to pay their taxes. They needed a little bit of a break. And I was the person that they needed on their side. And so for about 4 years, I did income tax from home. And then I said, I'm never going to make a good living at this because nobody knows I exist except the one person I meet every now and then. So in 2015, I opened a training center. I took my last penny and rented a nice big room. And I started teaching classes to the blue collar world, to the first generation, about communication, how to build a network with the affluent people, because the affluent people could open doors for us. And all of the people that I brought in were intimidated by anyone who had achieved anything in life. So I started teaching them how to walk into a room and be comfortable. I joined Toastmasters to learn how to do that myself. And then I got all of them to join Toastmasters because it was there that people wrapped their love around us and taught us, you know, maybe you shouldn't swear in this room. Just saying. Although they can't boss me around now, but then they could. If it wasn't for the networks that I have in my corner, I wouldn't be where I am today. I have connections from people that are third and fourth generation, you know, people whose parents and grandparents were doctors and lawyers who have come alongside. And what I have done is gone back to my home community, gone to all of the high schools, spoke to the kids who are going to get full scholarships to universities. And you guys know about that. And when they come here to Nova Scotia, because we have the best schools, I wrap my networks around them. So they never get in trouble on their journey, because a lot of them were coming here on full scholarship, but because they had never been away from rural before, they were getting like overwhelmed, a little too excited, spending too much money, and ending up quitting after the first year or so because they were out of their element. Now we bring them here before they are even going. We introduce them to some kids from here, some resources that are here. And whenever they run into trouble, they can reach out to one of us who surely can push back against an inequitable world. That's my networking piece.
Yay.
I use the, in my teaching, I use the apprenticeship model in everything that I do. I have taught, in 2018, I shut down the storefront. I had it open for 3 years, and I took everything into an online learning management system. You know, 20 years ago when I went to university, I was a very vulnerable young girl, very vulnerable. I'm not that today. There is nothing about me that needs to be pitied, except, you know, I'm visually impaired, and I'm not cool about that all the time. And that impacts your mental health and all that jazz. But I'm very privileged. And I recognize my privilege. And the apprenticeship model, especially as it was demonstrated to us in those very early days in the military, as the first women, we were part of a class action lawsuit a few years ago where the Canadian government settled with us. If I could tell you story, I won't tell you stories, but it was awful. It was awful, the treatment that we had. I know that you're doing stuff with STEM, and I've had conversations with STEM. It wasn't a great place for women to be. When there's a political will to get women in the door, like there's a political will now to get our temporary foreign workers in the door, that doesn't mean that the people with boots on the ground were excited. And they weren't all that glad for us to show up. But I had people come alongside and recognize what I could do well. Conflict management is one of those things. And so